Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Headache Pill podcast. Okay, great, got the name fucking down right. Hello, welcome to the Headache Pill. This is where I do like a podcast that sort of covers stuff that the recent video didn't really get to cover in that. So here we are. I'm doing amazingly. Oh my god, I'm on an absolute hot streak of piss. Anyway, so hello, how's everyone going? So basically I want to cover some stuff that the recent video didn't cover, like an additional tidbit. This is, as you can very well tell, unstructured. So I'm just going to basically riff. But I do have a vague idea. I want to, broadly speaking, follow the plot of a specific episode to cover, I guess, a particular bugbear I had, which is George Jetson is probably a terrible person. So it's wild. It's in that, again, I know it's a 60s show. So obviously we're dealing with like a 60s sense of humor here. And a lot of it boils down to like these gosh darn kids and their 60s rock and roll. I don't like it. You're meant to relate to the dad, but like it just comes off as woefully out of touch. And sometimes they lean into it, sometimes they don't. Sometimes it is just he just doesn't like the music. But of course, the music he likes, everyone's fine with. I don't know. It's just very silly. But it's like, you know, even in the future, there are some things that never change. The parents will always hate the musical taste of the kids. I mean, at least that's the trope, right? I don't really believe that's true. But like, that's the stereotype, right? It's just a show. If anything, it's a parody of how out of touch parents are, apparently. So it's born out of this 60s thing where your parents didn't fucking communicate to their kids or show emotional maturity, and you know, all this stuff. Yeah, it's all, as I said, it's stereotypes, right? So with that in mind, though, the particular episode I have in mind is episode 2 of season 1, the very second episode of The Jetsons.
The Jetsons, brought to you by famous Colgate Dental Cream with activated Gardol.
So dental cream is just toothpaste. It's just, I've just seen a regular box of toothpaste here. When was it called dental cream? I'm going to quickly Google that now. Dental cream? Yeah, dental cream is now more so to do with dentures. It's now to do with, like, keeping your false teeth in place. People don't call it dental cream. I mean, sometimes they do. Sometimes it's more of the kind of the fancier toothpastes. You know, it'd be the ones with, like, either prescribed or they've got some, you know, weird chemicals mixed into it. Like Gardol? What's Gardol? Let's see. It's a special ingredient in dental cream used throughout the 50s and the 60s in the US. Yeah, I think it is. I think you can still get it in some toothpastes. I don't think Colgate do anymore. But I think it's, again, some of the specialist toothpaste you can get this stuff in. But again, it's just weird. It's like, hey, kids, sorry to interrupt your Saturday morning cartoons, but have you considered something to keep your false teeth in place with this fancy toothpaste? The premise of it is that Judy's fascinated with this superstar singer. His name is Jet Streamer or something like that. And he plays his brand of rock, but it's like, it's just 60s rock. This is like the thing that I keep getting hung up on the fact that like the future doesn't show a future. There's no like, here's what future music would look like. You know, it was a sincere 60s song. I don't know, maybe the story behind it, that would have required me researching into this before recording. Go me. But like, I don't know whether this was like a sincere attempt at hitting the charts, you know, like, you know, can we make a good song and put it out there and maybe it'll actually do well on its own and, you know, or whatever. But it's just a very sincere 60s song, right? So he performs this song and the kids go crazy and they have this whole anti-gravity floor where they're doing their 60 dance moves, but they're like dancing up, you know, on the ceiling and stuff like that. And really it's just, you know, they're rotating the film cells upside down. This is Hanna-Barbera, after all, who are notoriously very lazy with it. Not lazy, but they have creative corner cutting. You know, that's the whole purpose of the Yogi Bear bow tie, which is like the fact that like Yogi Bear has a tie around his neck, and that's to imagine like in Flash, you have to, or even Photoshop, you have different layers, right? So imagine that the tie is at the very front layer and it masks the seam between the head and the body so that they can animate the head without having to redraw the body every single time. So they cut corners. So they have the body on a walk cycle. That's just a continuous loop. And the head could be on its own unique lip sync cycle. And so that's how they just save time and money animating these segments. They were very, very good at being very, very lazy. And I'm doing joking. Like, lazy, I don't mean they're really actually lazy. Lazy, I'm saying in the context of they're cutting corners. They're being creative and finding ways to, like, you know, make life easier for themselves. But either way, they're dancing around on the floor. And that bugs me anyway, in general, on its own anyway, because there's a whole constant shift in narrative as to whether or not anyone in the future can fly. Sometimes they can, sometimes they can't. There's one episode that's dedicated to the fact that they've invented this flying suit. It's the same episode with the bird on the ground and the unhoused man who lives on the bottom as well. In that same episode, they find themselves... The rival company, Cogsworth, invents this flying suit that when you wear it, it's a thought-controlled flying suit. And it's meant to revolutionize technology, revolutionize the flying cars. And, you know, this is going to be like, you know, fantastic invention for everyone. And then, like, through a series of mishaps involving the Jetsons, the company believes it just doesn't work. And they decide to just bin it. And that's how the unhoused guy finds it and flies around with it and stuff. So they just conclude, man will never fly. And then, like, yeah, as I said, in this episode, they fucking fly because they have an anti-gravity floor. And then in several episodes later, they have other means of just flying. And it's like, well, then they can just fly then, can't they? There's no, like, you know, they don't draw a line under this and be like, look, we can have any fancy future tech, whatever we like. But for continuity's sake, no one can fly. And they were like, fuck it. Anyone can fly at any given time because it's just the future. It's all Deus Ex Machina's. It's all space future magic, so what the fuck ever, anyone can fly. Sorry, I'm hung up on this thing. Jetstreamer announces a competition, like, write me a song, and if I like it, then I'll make it into a real song, and we'll go out on a date, which is fucking weird, as a prize, but sure, okay? So Judy Jetson's really excited. She writes a song, and she goes to mail it. The whole time, George Jetson, he's like real pissed off. He's like, fuck this. I can't stand this Jetstreamer. I don't like the fact that she likes this music. It makes me mad in an unreasonable way. So Judy hands him a letter to be mailed. Like, it's again, it's the 60s. So it's physical mail. It's not like an email. There's no, like, electronic carrier pigeon or anything. It's just your standard post, your standard envelope post. Anyway, so they he's given an envelope, but he's like, hey dad, will you send this letter for me? It's for a competition. And she leaves the room, and the dad opens the letter and he reads the lyrics, and he's like, oh, I'm not sending this. No, I don't want her to win this competition. Spend time with Jetstream. I mean, in fairness, again, she's better be 15. I wouldn't be cool, I think, with my 15-year-old hanging out with a famous singer. God, no. Jesus Christ. Not on our own. Fucking hell. Meanwhile, like, sort of subplot to the episode, I guess, separately, Elroy has, like, made up a silly little language. It is like eep, oop, up, ack, ack kind of thing. Like, a silly made-up language he's made, right? He's talking to a friend, and they're talking their made-up language, and so to help keep track, they've written down their language. And, George has this fantastic plan.
George, what are you doing?
I'm simply removing Judy's entry and replacing it with Elroy's secret code.
But why, dear?
Because with stuff like eep, op, ork, ah, we got a guaranteed loser. You get it?
Oh, dear.
To sabotage his own daughter. Right? This is the kind of man we're talking about in this show. The family man, right? He would intentionally sabotage his own daughter's attempt at winning a competition. Again, I can get behind the date thing. Don't like that. But, like, just the general concept of the competition itself. Like, what the fuck? What an awful thing to do. There was almost going to be this dedicated segment of the video of just being like, I just want to talk about what an awful man he is. So he mails that. And if you know, if you've ever seen a sitcom in your life, if you have any semblance of how the comedy sitcom plot subversion of expectations, if you know any of this stuff, you will see from a million fucking miles away where this story goes next. And it is obviously, it still wins the competition. Elroy's made up bullshit language still wins the songwriting competition. Okay. And, George is like, oh no, it still won. And they announce it on TV, like, you know, the singer comes back on TV and it's like, and the winner of the competition is Judy Jetson with her fantastic song, Eep, Up, Oop, Ark, Ark, or whatever. And, well, I'm going to go on a date with Judy Jetson. And George is like, oh, no. Now, where my mind goes immediately. So imagine you are Judy Jetson. Imagine you're enamored with a particular singer and you worked really hard on coming up with song lyrics and you mailed it. And then whilst the singer of your, you know, your idol still says that you are the winner of competition, it's for a different thing. It's for a thing you didn't write. Okay. You would feel horrible. You would feel like, oh, you know, imposter syndrome, or, you know, I don't deserve this. That's not my prize. Those aren't my lyrics. Aside from, like, just the absolute gut punch to the self esteem of, you know, your lyrics not being the winning one. You're announced the winning, but it's not for your creative work. Just the fact that it's somebody else, you know, your brothers even, doesn't matter who, but, you know, somebody else's lyrics that won the competition, but under your name, I would feel guilty as fuck. I would feel so bad because that's not my work, you know? But, yeah, and I feel like in a manner, maybe the show writers of, you know, of the Jetsons got this sort of vague message through from that, because, first of all, Judy's just happy to have won the competition. She doesn't give a shit when it's not her lyrics. She's just happy she won. But they seemingly have to patch up the fact that it's like, wait a minute, won't she feel bad that it isn't actually her lyrics? So they just added, they like weirdly crowbarred in this fact that, like, hey, she wrote them anyway.
But George, Eep, Op, Ork, Ah was Judy's idea in the first place, so she won anyway.
That's right, Pop. She wrote it for me yesterday.
All right, Elroy, go to bed.
And it's like, huh? You can't just... That's such a lame cop-out. You could have had this really fascinating, complicated thing where Judy's, like, got this complex. This feeling of, like, she doesn't deserve this, but she's being paraded around as this, like, winner. And she's like, but I don't deserve this. And she's having to, like, fake it, be like, yeah, I wrote the song. And then I go, go on, how'd you come up with the song? And she's like, I don't know, you know. She would feel awful about this. You know, it would like, you know, be this complicated moment between her and her dad, because it's like, while she got what she wanted, you know, it came out of the fact that her father betrayed her and tried to sabotage her. But no, it's just like ham waved away with just like, oh no, she wrote those anyway. She wrote it with her brother, so it's fine now. And I just found that really fucking weird. And I feel like they never bounced back from this, or this didn't go unnoticed, because there is a movie, one of the Jetsons movie called Rockin' with Judy Jetson. It's a straight to TV movie, similar vein to the Jetsons Meet the Flintstones. And here they basically repeat the plot in that there's a competition to write a song, and they will perform the song, and Judy writes a song, but there's a mix up. And I think it's mixed up with some secret alien bomb recipe instructions or something. And but it's done in an alien language. And so that gets mixed up. And they announce the winner is her song, but with the wrong lyrics. And she does spend the whole episode racked with guilt because it's not her song. But she has to sort of pretend it's her song because she won the competition. And she feels really bad about it. And that's like, where the fuck was that in the first time you did this? So, yeah, weirdly enough, I feel like they basically remade this episode, but done in the direction I felt like it should have done. Which is really fascinating. It's almost like a, you know, retrospective of like, yeah, we don't like how that went down, so we're gonna do that again. But like, yeah, again, it doesn't ever come back to the dad. At no point does Judy challenge her dad in this episode, right? At no point does she say to him, "Hey, man, what the fuck? Why did you ruin my, yeah, why did you attempt to ruin my chances? What a horrible thing you've done." No, none of that happens. It's just, you know, George's like, oh, man. So he in the end stalks his daughter while she's on this date with the singer. And again, the stalking part's not so good, but certainly an escort, certainly a what's the term? You know, where you're meant to go on, not entourage. Ah, shit, what's the term? It's, you know, like when the dad goes along with the date, just to make sure they're fine. You know that, I forget the term for it, but you know what I mean. So, yeah, I can understand. I can get behind that. I can get behind the dad tagging along because it's a stranger. It's inappropriate, I think, to date a 15, yeah, for a professional singer to date a 15-year-old fan. Like, there's lots of dodgy levels on that. So I can understand the dad tagging along just to make sure everyone's safe. That's fine. But to stalk his own daughter is just another layer of just, like, betrayal of trust and a whole lot of stuff. But he follows her around, and then it boils down to the fact that, like, they go to perform the song, but their drummer is dead. No, what happened to the drum? Oh, yeah. There's a bit where he goes to the drummer because he wants to keep spying on her, right? So now they're going to perform the song, but he wants to keep spying on her. So he goes to the drummer of the band, and he's like, and he says this, right?
"Hey, bud. I'll give you $10 to take the night off."
$10? Hey, for $10, I'll take the week off, man.
I love that. I love that so much. Like, $10, I'll take the week off. Like, I love that joke. I it's not a joke, but I love the joke. It's like the idea of trying to bribe somebody with a thoroughly underwhelming amount of money, and they're like, "Oh man, hell yeah!" You know, like I want to do that joke. I want to throw it in there sometimes where it'll be like, you know, "Hey man, I'll give you £1 if you take the night off." And it's like, "Oh boy!" You know, despite being probably paid well more to be there. I don't know, maybe this was a 60s thing that $10 was worth a lot more. I mean, it probably was to an extent, but not that much, surely. Not enough to, like, bail on the band, but I don't know. I find that extremely funny. And then, so he spies on her from the drum kit, and, but in the end, he's basically spotted, and he's like, I mean, yeah, and the singer's like, "Yeah, fuck it, perform the song with us," and away we go. And then sure enough, you know, the dad, like, likes the song now, and it's, ugh. What an episode. What a really fucking bizarre episode. And this is number 2 out of, what, 75 episodes or what the fuck ever I in the end watched. Just absolutely bizarre. And, like, I had no space to talk about this in the video because it's just a complete tangent. And, like, it goes nowhere because it's just like, this is weird. But, yeah, that's it, basically. I just wanted to talk about that. So, that's it. So, I mean, there's other bizarre stuff I'd love to, you know, maybe there's a separate space for it in a future video. So, stuff like, you know, the Jetsons, they sleep in separate beds. And sometimes it's a shared bed, and sometimes it's two individual beds, and sometimes it's two individual beds that are side by side. Like, and sometimes separate rooms, you know. That whole 60s thing about the whole, you know, you kind of a couple share a bed together trope. And yeah, the thing, but the fact about flying, yeah, lots of weird stuff in the Jetsons. It's an interesting watch. Nothing else. It is a fascinating time capsule. I mean, I can't discredit the effect the Jetsons had from the perspective of the perception of the future, especially in this time of optimism. I think it was very much needed. I mean, the show was quite future-facing anyway. It was the first, I believe it was the first all-coloured show go on TV. And to the point where most people who watched it originally would have watched it in black and white, but it was published in colour. And so it was one of those, like, I mean, they probably would have had a lesser experience because it wasn't designed for black and white TV. So maybe the colors would have muddled a little bit. But that's the thing I've always found fascinating about Hanna-Barbera. They were always kind of future facing. The Jetsons movie embraced CG animation as a part of it. I think it looks pretty cool for what it is. So, you know, I respect Hanna-Barbera. As I said, they did lots of creative corner cutting, and I did call them lazy several times. But, like, at the same time, they embraced technology. They embraced change. And that's fascinating to see. That's it. That's basically the end of this podcast. So, sorry, this was just a thoroughly more rambling than I think I've ever done in the past. But I just wanted to, like, be like, hey, man, what the fuck was George Jetson doing? So that's it. That's the end of this podcast. So thank you very much for joining me for that one. And I'll see you guys again next time. Alrighty. Bye-bye.